I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today, books on sisters. Joining us on the phone, Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning, Mindy.
And Kelly Porter, librarian at the Woods Hole Library. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, Mindy. Hi, Jill.
All working remotely today. With a bit of a diversion, if you will, take our minds off of some of the other more heavy news that's happening. This, Kelly, sisters was your idea.
Actually, it was my idea.
Oh, it was your idea.
It was Jill's idea, but you can't see me, but I assume you can recognize my voice. Before we get too deep into this, I just want to say a couple sort of public service announcements for libraries, because I'm afraid we'll run out of time. And what I want to say is that most libraries, in fact, as far as I know, all Cape and Island libraries are closed right now, but do know that you can get a CLAMS card, an e-card available through the CLAMS catalog, and that there are lots of digital resources available for you. Every library may have something different, but there's Hoopla, there's Acorn TV concerts. You can download the Libby app to read ebooks, audiobooks. You could learn a language. I just noticed that we happen to have the great courses, and I noticed the most popular class right now is the real history of secret societies. I don't know why that happens to be the most popular one. And if you don't want to deal with an app, you can also just go to Project Gutenberg, which is gutenberg.org, and that has 60,000 free ebooks, and you'll find Trollope and Dickens and Sherlock Holmes. So, you know, there are lots of options from home. And I also, because this is all we were pushing before everything happened, was while you're home, fill out your Census 2020 form. So that's the advertisement.
Well, you know, and it happened so fast, but you know, I was talking to my sister-in-law who lives in Colorado, and she volunteers at her library. She brings books to people who can't get to the library. And she was saying just before they closed her last delivery that it was like the grocery stores wiped out the books. She was like so happy to see all of these books, you know, gone from the library. They had, a little more notice than we did.
Right, like before, the same thing happens before a snowstorm, right? Everything, somebody gets there. Yeah. And the other thing I should definitely mention is that keep your books, your DVDs, your whatever, your games, whatever you have checked out, a sewing machine, whatever you have checked out from your library, please keep it. We cannot take returns easily right now because we have no staff working in the buildings. We have staff working from home, but not in the buildings. So
good to know.
And there will be no fines.
And there will. That is the other important piece of information. Mm-hmm. Thank you. No fines. So we can continue our regular.
All right, on to sisters. Yeah. Jill, was this because of the popularity of Little Women?
Well, actually, I had gotten this idea like years ago, I think, well before Little Women. However, the once I had seen Little Women, the film, not once but twice, because the first time I just couldn't. I hated it so much I couldn't watch it because I was so. Well, there's a good reason for this. It's because if you're really, really, really attached to a book, it's very hard sometimes to see a director's vision of that book. But then because so many people love the film, I was like, well, I have to go back and see it again. And so I did go back and see it again. And the second time, it was not so scary as it was the first time. When you're used to them saying Christmas isn't Chrissy, you know, without any presents, it's hard to get yourself back into the film. And I also say one of the most spectacular things about that film, and it's worth going to see just for that, is the scene where they're binding a book, and they show the whole process of binding her first copy of Little Women. So that was a great pleasure. But yes, Little Women was definitely part of the inspiration as to why to do this show now.
Mm-hmm. All right, so what is your first book, Jill?
Well, indeed, it's Little Women, of course, but particularly what I have here with me is Little Women, an annotated edition, which was edited by Daniel Sheeley, and it is this incredible, if you've already read Little Women, this is a great book to be looking at to find out everything you didn't know, all the words you might not have known because they were 19th century words it will tell you about. For example, we were, in fact, I think that when we were doing the romance show, we were talking about clothing. Well, there's this whole section, for example, in here where Meg is saying, you must have gloves or I won't go, when she's, you know, they're talking about going to this dance. Gloves are more important than anything else. You can't dance without them. And if you don't, I should be so mortified. And then, so there's a note in the annotated edition saying, in the mid-19th century, it was considered improper for women without gloves to dance with men, as they would be holding hands. Emily Thornwell writes, quote, gloves should harmonize with your dress and must always be clean. Nothing can be more improper than high-colored gloves. The primrose and the white for evening parties are the most elegant, if your dress will admit of their being worn. So a caution, which seems very timely right now. Everyone's wearing gloves. So. Yeah. And it's basically, as this, there was this great article written up about this particular, the annotated edition, and in the Chicago Tribune, and Amy Gentry, who wrote the article, says, like other Norton annotated classics, the annotated Little Women offers a bridge from nostalgia to a deeper understanding of the work, balancing Madison's introduction, annotations, and lengthy biographical essay with an inviting array of illustrations, photographs, and color movie stills. And so, again, she says, if you've gone 30 years wondering what blancmange, tin kitchens, deaconing, sleepy hollow chairs, and stand dishes are, this book is for you. So I'm recommending Little Women in general, but particularly this great annotated edition.
Great. And for folks who are not familiar with our monthly book show, we will have a link later today to the books that we talk about this morning, so you don't have to, you know, madly jot down every title. Kelly, what have you got?
Well, first I have to confess to Jill, I have an unpopular opinion that I don't love Little Women. I remember loving it as a child, and then going back recently and because I wanted to reread it before I went to see the movie, I could not stand the writing at all, and I gave up.
That's great. Well, as you, may I just say, I commend you for giving up, because I used to think, oh my God, I have to read till the end of the book, and now it's like 50 pages and I'm done. So
I mean, it is fast, because then I started to think about, well, why does this book endure in the way that it does with, you know, so many adaptations, and people still read the book, even younger people, and find things to relate to in it. So clearly, you know, there's substance there, but the writing I just could not handle.
Kelly, did you like the movie?
I did not see it yet. And
oh, you didn't see it? Okay.
No. So
I bet you like the movie more than you like.
I think I will, because
in this case,
I know that she tweaks the ending, and what I know about it, it sounds more satisfactory to me.
Well, and there is actually one of the other books I have in front of me is something called On Life, Death, and Little Women, March Sisters. And actually, it's all these people who, four lifelong fans of Little Women, who come together and write essays about it. And it's interesting how the book changed for them as they got older, because I think it does. It's one of those books that, depending on when you read it, and I think I first read it in like fifth grade. I mean, we were in summering in Ithaca, because my mother was going to a class at Cornell, and I remember reading all of Louise May Alcott, but then reread it in eighth grade, and, you know, but I can certainly understand not all classics are for everyone.
Yeah.
You know, I should mention, since we're talking about Little Women, and maybe if you didn't like that, Kelly, maybe you would like Geraldine Brooks' book, March, which is the novel that she sort of retells Louisa May Alcott's story from the point
definitely.
Of view of the absent father.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, so narrowing down this list was kind of fun, because, I mean, I definitely do love my 19th century literature, a lot of which, you know, deals with sisters and that sphere of domesticity. And, you know, I feel like you could pick almost any Jane Austen book and use that as an example of a book about sisters. But instead, I decided to go a different direction for my first book and bring a book that I loved when I was a child, and that is Beezus and Ramona by Beverly Cleary.
Yes, yes, I'm so glad you brought that.
I loved this entire series as a child. There's 8 books in the whole series, and recently reread it because I was trying to get my daughter interested in these books, and it was written in 1955, and it absolutely holds up. The writing is just wonderful, and the slice of life that it provides, those little tidbits of, like, just mundane daily life between siblings and parents are just so spot on and great. So this is the first of the series, is Beezus and Ramona, and it's the only one written from Beezus's point of view. Her real name is Beatrice, but Ramona calls her Beezus. And so in this book, Beezus is 9 and Ramona is 4. So you can imagine that 9-year-old Beezus is just completely exasperated by her zany 4-year-old sister. And it's wonderful because it's so realistic. And by the end of it, Beezus realizes that she can love, but she might not always like Ramona. And I think that's an important lesson for siblings to learn. And I think my kids are downstairs listening to this right now, so I want them to remember that lesson.
So what age, Kelly, what age is the book aimed at?
I mean, I think kids starting around 2nd or 3rd grade would really love this. To read on their own, but I think you could read it to a first grader and they would just, or even younger, you know, just listening to the stories. It's so relatable. And there are, I think the audiobooks are written or are read by Stockard Channing, if I'm remembering correctly. So that's great to listen to as well. And you can download those online through OverDrive. So those stuck at home don't have to miss out on the audiobooks.
No, the audiobooks are great.
The entire series, it's great because it does follow the sisters throughout the years and how their relationship grows and changes. And it's just great.
Yeah. All right, Jill.
Well, I actually also brought one kid's book from my youth that I remembered and was one of the first things I thought of actually when we decided to do the show. And it is called All of a Kind Family by Sydney Taylor. And I had no idea. It's sort of funny. In a lot of these books that I picked up, there seem to be like major librarian characters in them. And I did not remember that All of a Kind Family starts with a chapter called The Library Lady. And it's all about how much these 5 sisters, because it's 5 sisters who are living in, who are Jewish and who are living in New York City. And it's, as I say, they love, one of the best things they love to do is go to the library, which, of course, needless to say, was one of my favorite things to do as a kid as well. The girls are Ella, Charlotte, Henny, Sarah, and Getty. And what I did not remember is in the last chapter, I really don't think I'm giving much away here, but there is a son is born. And, of course, this is a big to-do because finally the father has a son. But the girls are very fun, and it's got really nice illustrations. And when Taylor published this in 1951, books featuring religious Jewish children were hard to come by. So it was a big deal that it came, you know, that was one of its appeals. And also, I did not know that the author, because these are things you find out when you start looking at these things, was an actress and a dancer for the Martha Graham Company as well.
Oh, wow.
But she's best remembered for these books that she, there's a whole series of them, which I also didn't know because I had only read the first one. It's just about these 2 loving parents who are bringing up these 5 girls in a Lower East Side tenement at the turn of the 20th century. And it's about the family. And I think anything that is a sort of a sweet but nice tale of a family is a good book to read right now and would be a great book, I think, to read aloud with kids as well. All of a Kind Family by Sydney Taylor.
You're listening to The Point. We are talking about books on sisters with Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Kelly Porter, librarian at the Woods Hole Library. 866-999-4626 is our number if you have some suggestions on books for us this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Kelly, what have you got next?
Well, now for something not so sweet. I brought We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson.
Yes. Good.
This is just one of my all-time favorite books. I love Shirley Jackson so much. So this book came out in 1962. It was her final published work. And it's written from the point of view of 18-year-old Catherine Mary Cat Blackwood. And it she lives with her older sister, Constance, and their uncle, Julian. And so it's a very dark book. I don't want to give too much away because there's lots of twists and turns in here. But the basic premise is that the rest of their family is dead from being poisoned with sugar that's laced with arsenic sprinkled on their blackberries. And Constance is arrested and then later acquitted for the murder. But you don't really know what happens until kind of toward the end. You can start to sort of figure it out. But it, you know, the relationship between the sisters is so central to the book, and the way their world is so tiny in their house. They're very ostracized from the townspeople. So there's a lot of talk about Mary Cat is the one who goes out and runs errands for the family, and she's aware of what people think of her and her family and her sister, and she's very protective of that. And so it talks a lot about just family loyalties and how that twists and turns. And it's just it's a really great diversion.
And the title again is?
The title is We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson.
And I just have to add to that that I have that in my pile of books as well. And I'm so glad you had it as well. And I want to read just the very first paragraph so you get a sense. The narrator's voice is so fabulous in this book. It begins, "My name is Mary Catherine Blackwood. I'm 18 years old, and I live with my sister Constance. I have often thought that with any luck at all, I could have been born a werewolf because the two middle fingers on both my hands are the same length, but I've had to be content with what I had. I dislike washing myself and dogs and noise. I like my sister Constance and Richard Plantagenet and Amanita Fallowdies, the death cup mushroom. Everyone else in my family is dead." So that's the opening paragraph, which how can you not, you know, stop reading with that kind of beginning of a paragraph? It's a great book.
I love books with twists and turns, and you're trying to figure it out as you go along. That's a great suggestion.
Oh, yeah. Shirley Jackson is just the master of that, like, deeply psychological wallop. She wrote, which I'm sure a lot of people have read, the short story, The Lottery. It's basically like a one- or two-page story. It's very, very short.
And devastating at the same time.
It's so chilling, and it's just amazing. It's an amazing piece of writing.
Great. All right, Jill.
One of the books that I discovered in looking for books on sisters was this great revelation to me. I had never read this author before. I now want to read everything else she has written. The book that I read is called All My Puny Sorrows by...
Oh, yes. Mir.
Do you know that book?
I just started reading it last night.
Oh, my gosh. Wait till you. It's so good. It's so good. Yeah. And it's the Miriam Taves is the author. And the title, All My Puny Sorrows, comes actually from a Coleridge poem, which she quotes in the book. And I'll read you just a little bit of that, which is, "I, too, a sister had, an only sister. She loved me dearly, and I doted on her. To her, I poured forth all my puny sorrows as a sick patient in his nurse's arms, and of the heart those hidden maladies that shrink ashamed from even friendship's eye. Oh, I have woke at midnight and have wept because she was not." And the book itself is hard in some ways to describe because it is a book that involves two sisters, one of whom is a concert pianist traveling around the world, the other one who stays at home and has two kids and has two men that she'd been involved with that she's no longer involved with, and her mother is part of this, and she comes from a family of Mennonites, so you learn a lot more than I ever knew about Mennonites in this book. But what happens is the one sister who is Yoli, Yolandi she's known, is the middle-aged mother of two teenagers, and her sister is Elfrida, who's known as Elf, who is this concert pianist who is determined to kill herself. So you would think this would be a really hard book to read, and in some ways it is, but in fact it is so... It is so funny. I can't tell you how funny this book. It's hard to describe how funny it is. But the narrator is so funny that even though she's going through these horrible, horrible things with her sister and her family, she is able to keep this sort of light mood about everything. And I read about the author, and it turns out that, in fact, the author, this is in fact, autobiographical. She did have a sister who killed herself, and she decided she would try to write about it and that she herself did use humor in order to get through it. So you learn, again, a lot about the sisters. And there's a section, here's a little bit about the sister who plays the piano, who is suicidal. About talking about playing the piano. She told me that the most important thing was to establish the tenderness right off the bat, or at least close to the top of the piece, just a hint of it, a whisper, but a deep whisper, because the tension will mount, the excitement and the drama will build. I was writing it down as fast as I could. And when the action rises, the audience might remember the earlier moment of tenderness, and remembering will make them long to return to infancy, to safety, to pure love. Then you might move away from that, put the violence and agony of life into every note, building, building still, until there is an important decision to make, return to tenderness, even briefly, glancingly, or continue on with the truth, the violence, the pain, the tragedy to the very end. Okay, I said, that should do it. Well, thanks for sort of answering my question, weirdo, because the sister was asking about, you know, what happens when she plays the piano. There is also, of course, I shouldn't say of course, but it does seem like in many of these books, librarians have shown up. And in this one, there's a sort of funny quote where Yoli is saying, sister who is not suicidal, Yoli, she said, I'm just saying that apologies aren't the bedrock of civilized society. All right, I said, I agree. But what is the bedrock of civilized society? Libraries, said Elf. So always nice to have support of libraries in novels that you read. But this book is really, again, it's very funny, it's very sad, and you can't stop reading it once you begin. And it is also one of those books, I should just mention, which seem to be coming out more and more, where none of the conversation is in quotations. So if you're used to reading novels with everything in quotations, this might off-put you for a little bit, but you'll get over it and you'll enjoy the book. It's called All My Puny Sorrows by Marion Taves.
All right. Kelly.
I thought I would bring a cookbook that's been making the rounds at our library. It's called Sister Pie, the Recipes and Stories of a Big-Hearted Bakery in Detroit by Lisa Ludwinski. And you would think from the title that maybe it's sisters writing this book, but it's just one woman. And so I wanted to find out what the origin of the Sister Pie, it's named after her bakery that's very, very popular in Detroit. And so from her website, she said, the concept is centered around her pie sisterhood. She says, the name was inspired by a term of endearment that Lisa and her younger sister, Sarah, share for each other. They would say to each other, what's up, Sister Pie? I love you, Sister Pie. The concept then grew to be inspired by an image of women, sisters, mothers, grandmothers, friends, gathering around a kitchen counter, pitting cherries, and rolling out pie dough. And it sounds like, from what I've read, that most of the people employed in her bakery are women, and they have they have daily dance breaks in the afternoon, and it just sounds like a really fun
visit. Oh, what a fun place to work.
Yeah. And beyond that, though, the recipes in this book and the photography are just amazing. She's got some pretty non-traditional pie flavors. She's got a sweet beet pie and a cranberry crumble pie, and then there's savory pies like delicata squash and sage hand pies. And the recipe that I really want to try next is the buckwheat chocolate chip cookies.
Mm.
There's peanut butter paprika cookies. So lots of really great things to bake, and just a really nice concept, and, you know, just makes you want to go visit the bakery in Detroit and, and see what it's all about.
Or try some of these unusual, and try some of these unusual recipes as we're kind of all spending a little more time in the kitchen right now.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, just kind of fun to, explore a little bit of new flavors for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Right, so, Sister Pie by Lisa Ledwinski.
Well, and I also have brought a cookbook. This one, because it does seem like a lot of people are cooking up a storm right now. And this one is Heirloom Baking with the Brass Sisters. It's more than 100 years of recipes discovered and collected by the Queens of Comfort Food, written by Marilyn Brass and Sheila Brass, who are indeed sisters. And this is their second book. And they begin it by saying in their preface, "We are two roundish, bespeckled women in our 60s who have a combined total of 110 years home baking experience. Sheila was 11 years old when she baked her first cake in the kitchen where we grew up in Winthrop, Massachusetts. Marilyn's first baking attempt was a pineapple coconut cake, although she does have memories of replicating the filled cookies and Welsh rarebit she learned how to make in her seventh grade cooking class. As you can see, they have a sense of humor about their cooking. And what they do is they make an effort to find manuscript cookbooks, so cookbooks that have never been published, and they pick out the recipes they think are best. So they're both artificial of cookbooks and recipes, and making cookbooks themselves. And they talk about what heirloom baking is, and the essence of heirloom baking. Heirloom baking is one of the most important connections to our past. It nourishes us, and it is a great part of our culinary heritage. Inheriting heirloom recipes is what we enjoy most, next to eating what we bake. It is the excitement of the search and the thrill of discovering these treasures. It is the talking about, the chewing over, the digesting of an old recipe, whether it is passed down to us in oral or written form. It is the art of interpreting the recipe, baking it, how it looks, tastes, and smells, preparing it, and finally serving it that gives us such joy." And to give you an idea of what some of the recipes are in here, for example, they have a recipe from the 1890s for steamed chocolate pudding. So every recipe dates, tells you when it originally showed up on the scene. Marshmallow fudge brownie showed up in the 1930s, as did Libby's coconut washboards. They give you tips. They have pictures. They also have pictures of the original cookbooks that they took them from, these manuscript cookbooks. And I do know, I mean, I think it's so important to hang on to recipes. I know I have all my mother's cookbooks after she died, and it just makes me so happy to have them. I've got recipes that my aunt and grandmother made, and it's a great thing to hang on to those. Mm-hmm. This book is called Heirloom Baking with the Brass Sisters.
I'd like to try that steamed chocolate pudding.
Yeah, I know. It does sound good.
Sounds yummy. Yeah. All right, Kelly?
Well, I brought another kid's book that, speaking of the enduring quality of Little Women, this is very much a reboot of Little Women, and it's The Penderwicks, A Summer Tale of Four Sisters, Two Rabbits, and a Very Interesting Boy by Jean Birdsall. It's the first in a 5-book series about this family of four sisters, and it's very, very popular at our library with all the kids, especially in the summer. It's just a really fun summer read series. And so the premise is that the Penderwicks, there's four sisters. There's responsible, practical Rosalind, stubborn, feisty Sky, dreamy, artistic Jane, and shy little sister Batty. So you can already tell there's definitely an analog to Little Women in just the characterization of the sisters. But what I just love about it is it's just, you know, your fun adventure story. I'll just read the beginning of it because it really sets up the premise. It says, "For a long time after that summer, the four Penderwick sisters still talked of Arundel. Fate drove us there, Jane would say. No, it was the greedy landlord who sold our vacation house on Cape Cod, someone else would say, probably Skye. Who knew which was right? But it was true that the beach house that they usually rented had been sold at the last minute, and the Penderwicks were suddenly without summer plans." And so the idea is that they usually would have come to Cape Cod, but instead they rent a cottage in the Berkshire Mountains sight unseen, thinking they don't know what it's going to look like when they get there. And it turns out that it's a small little cottage on a larger estate. And so there's lots of mischief that they can get into there. There's a neighbor boy next door, and it's just a fun story of the girls running around and having adventures in the woods and around the cottage, and it's a really great story.
Oh, and the name of it again is?
It's The Penderwicks by Jean Birdsall. It's a really great series, and a lot of kids that come into the library really love it, especially kids around Massachusetts, since it's all around here.
Right, yeah, face here. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about books on sisters with Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Kelly Porter, librarian at Woods Hole Library. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Henry is giving us a call from Eastham. Good morning, Henry.
Good morning, Mindy and Jill and
Kelly.
Glad to be with you.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got a couple for you, actually. My older daughter and I seem to have similar tastes in books, and she found this first one. And the character's name is Flavia Deluce. I'm sure the librarians know Flavia.
Yeah.
It's a series written by Alan Bradley. There must be a half a dozen or more. So if you like the characters, these quirky sisters, after you read one, you've got a half a dozen more or so to go. Flavia is, the girls live in a very old house in England with their father and his former batman from the army, who kind of takes care of them. And the mother is deceased, and that's a wonderful thread in the story. But Flavia goes into her deceased uncle's chemistry laboratory, and so chemistry is a big part of it. I was a science teacher, taught some chemistry, so I love the references to the chemistry. I love the interplay of these quirky sisters, one musician, one always primping, and so it's great interplay. The father's batman takes really good care of them, keeps an eye on them, so I just think it's terrific. So I was at my daughter's over Christmas at Christmas time, and I happened to look on her kitchen counter there, and she had a book. It was called "Lady Waits with Cop," "Girl Waits with Gun." That's the name of it, and it's written by Amy Stewart. This is the story of the cop sisters, three sisters, based on a true story. Cop sisters living in northern New Jersey, where I come from, so that was great fun. It's set in 1909, and one of the sisters, Constance Cop, does such a good job in bringing someone to justice that the sheriff enlists her as a matron at the jail and kind of a colleague in tracking down evildoers. And so I read three books, and I've checked, and now I think that there are a couple more in the works. So Alan Bradley with the Flavia Deluce character and Amy Stewart with the cop sisters fighting crime in North Jersey.
Great. Henry, thanks for those suggestions. That's great. Thanks for calling with that. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Ellie called to suggest Little House on the Prairie as well, the series Little House on the Prairie.
Okay.
Jill.
Well, first of all, I want to say thanks for that call because I've never heard of Amy Stewart before, so I can't wait to try Girl Waits with Gun. That sounds terrific. One of the things I came across when I was prepping for this was one of the five best series that the for some of you that may know, the Wall Street Journal has a really good book section on Saturdays on over the weekend. And one of my friends sent one of the five best, and they do this thing called Five Best, and it can be five best novels about anything or nonfiction. And it's a really fun series. But one of my friends remembered that they had done a five best on Sisters. And I was like, ah, send it to me. And so so it's Zoe Heller on Sisters. This actually came out in 2010 before the Little Women film. And in fact, Little Women is on here. But the one that really reminded me of a book I had read a really long time ago and had pretty much forgotten about, and it is wonderful, is Housekeeping by Marilyn Robinson. And as is written in this bit of a description of it, Marilyn Robinson's gorgeous novel, which manages to impart an atmosphere both melancholic and strangely joyous, takes place in the imaginary town of Fingerbone, Idaho, where Ruth and her younger sister, Lucille, grow up under the care of a succession of female relatives. The last of these, their Aunt Sylvie, is a kind, albeit unorthodox, guardian who has spent several years living as a transient before coming to look after the children. Ruth finds herself in sympathy with Sylvie's eccentric approach to life, but Lucille is mortified by her aunt's oddities and yearns to join the ranks of the respectable. Robinson's description of the sisters' gradual alienation from one another evokes, with painful accuracy, the impermanence of even the most powerful childhood bonds. And the book is beautiful. It is, I'm starting to reread it. It is as beautiful as I remember. And the funny thing, the funny movie-related bit about this book for me is that when I saw actually the film before I read the book, and before I saw the film, I saw my friend Sarah and I saw the trailer for the film. And when you saw the trailer, it looked like it was going to be this great raucous comedy, and we so we went to the film thinking, oh, this is going to be a great raucous comedy. It was not. Believe me, it is not. It is not. It has some comic bits in it, but it is not a comedy. But it is beautifully written, as it was written up originally when it was first printed in the New York Times. Anatole Breuer writes, here's a first novel that sounds as if the author has been treasuring it up all her life, waiting for it to form itself. It's as if in writing it, she broke through the ordinary human condition with all its dissatisfactions and achieved a kind of transfiguration. You can feel in the book a gathering voluptuous release of confidence, a delighted surprise at the unexpected capacities of language, a close, careful fondness for people that we thought only saints felt. And it is, as I say, also very, it's got some really funny bits here. The narrator is one of the sisters. Her name is Ruth. And here's a little bit on the narrator describing her sister. Every morning in August, Lucille, this is her sister, Lucille, in her nightgown, touched her toes by our open window because she had read somewhere that good health is a form of beauty. She brushed her red hair 100 strokes till it crackled and flew after the brush. She groomed her nails. This was all in preparation for school, since Lucille was determined now to make something of herself. And with what rigor, what hard purpose, she threw herself down in the grass with Ivanhoe and The Light That Failed and Wuthering Heights and Little Men and National Geographic and anything else she took to be improving. So it's got some silly stuff in it, some funny stuff. The sisters are really great. It's a beautifully written book. If you have not read it, it actually was chosen as one of the big read books for the National Endowment for the Arts runs. It is called Housekeeping by Marilyn Robinson. It's a beautiful, heartbreaking story.
Thank you. Kelly.
So the next book I brought is called Fangirl by Rainbow Rowell. And this book is marketed as a young adult novel, but I think it appeals to adults as well. And so the premise of this book is that it's about twin sisters named Cass and Wren, and they are both freshmen just starting out in college. Growing up, they've been very steeped in a series about a character named Simon Snow, which is absolutely based on Harry Potter. It's, you know, a young magical boy growing up kind of situation. And so one of the things that they have always done as sisters growing up is they've written a lot of fan fiction about the Simon Snow character, and it's always been kind of their bonding experience together. And now going to college, they're finding that they're growing apart a little bit. Cass is very outgoing and is meeting lots of new friends, but Wren is struggling. And so you have that dynamic of the sisters kind of going out into the world and finding their own footing and their own identity as, you know, individuals as opposed to twins and sisters. And that's an interesting interplay to read about. But then you also have the whole premise of writing the fan fiction and exploring a lot of facets of their personalities and their relationships through their writing. And so what's kind of interesting about this is that in and of itself, just creating that Simon Snow character is kind of her Rainbow Rowell's own fan fiction about Harry Potter in a way. And so there's lots of layers of unpacking, like, okay, you know, who's writing about what and what's, you know, the fan fiction here. So that's kind of fun to unpack. And then this book is interesting because it was so popular and people loved the writing about Simon Snow so much, it created a spinoff about those characters. It's like its own standalone book. So there's many layers that, honestly, I've kind of lost track of, but the teens that come into the library absolutely get all of it, and they love it. And so I just really like, yeah, it's a great story about sisters and kind of finding who they are out in the world. It's called Fangirl.
It's called, I'm sorry, the name again is?
It's called Fangirl.
Fangirl. Okay, got it. Okay. Let's talk to Hattie, who's giving us a call from Sandwich. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. Hello. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning.
And you, hi. Yes, good morning. Hi. Enjoyed the show so much. And when I looked up from listening, I saw on my shelf both the Little Women and the All of a Kind family books. on my shelf, and I was looking at it, sort of starting the list to read during our current time. I also was thinking about some interesting sister relationships in books, like in the old favorites, like Anne of Green Gables, for example, and books like that. And also, I know this is about books, but television shows recently, the British streaming service that I was watching showed a show called Sisters, a contemporary show about sisters. Wanted to call in to say thank you for the wonderful suggestions for more books on sisters. I think I always wanted a sister when I was young, but my brother said one was enough.
Addie, thanks for that call. Appreciate that. Sally sent us a note. She says, Safi's Angel by Hillary McKay is a delight. I love its quirkiness and its not entirely canonized view of families. Families are messy. Parents are flawed. This book touches on these themes. I suggest it for a mom and daughter book group, seeing how much my own daughter adored it. It's part of a series that we found laugh-aloud delight in reading together. There is a wonderful boy in the midst of this colorful and fierce female wolf pack. Thanks, Sally, for that suggestion. And Jill A., what have you got next?
I have brought with me a book that I just have the sense that Shirley Jackson must have read this before she wrote Every Voice, Lived in the Castle, which is a book that came out in 1948. It is a novel by Dodie Smith called I Capture the Castle, and was recently written up, I think I must have seen this in the New York Times, that Lily King, who is an author herself, wrote that this would be a great book to read right now, and She writes, I Captured a Castle by Dodie Smith is pure delight and also a bit of a quarantine book with two sisters isolated in a small rundown castle in the 1930s with their blocked writer father and loony stepmother until two eligible young men come to visit their country house down the road. And the first paragraph has such, I mean, it's this great young female narrator, as does the We Have Always Lived in the Castle has, and it begins, I write this sitting in the kitchen sink. That is, my feet are in it, the rest of me is on the draining board, which I have padded with our dog's blanket and the tea cozy. I can't say that I'm really comfortable, and there's a depressing smell of carbolic soap, but this is the only part of the kitchen where there is any daylight left, and I have found that sitting in a place where you have never sat before can be inspiring. I wrote my very best poem while sitting on the hen house, though even that isn't a very good poem. I've decided my poetry is so bad that I mustn't write any more of it. So that's the opening, and that is the feeling of the book. She's also a big journal writer, which I appreciate as well. She writes, I'm writing this journal partly to practice my newly acquired speed writing and partly to teach myself how to write a novel. So it's fun, and it is, as it happens, Dodie Smith, which I did not know until very recently, also wrote The 101 Dalmatians. Oh. So, you know, you never know, which, of course, was made into a number of movies.
Films, yeah. All right, Kelly.
Well, I, like our caller, I do not have a sister, and I always wanted one. And, you know, I grew up with things like Little House on the Prairie and just this idealized sister relationship was just something that I always felt like I missed out on, and you know, especially I could have used a twin sister. That would have been great and more preferable to my older brother. But so as it is, the whole sister relationship is kind of mysterious to me because I've never experienced it. And so I think one book that could help a little bit is called The Sister Knot. It's by Terry Apter. It's Why We Fight, Why We're Jealous, and Why We'll Love Each Other No Matter What. And I think this book, it's ostensibly, you know, it's geared towards sisters who want to read about the relationship that they're going through. I think it's a little academic, but I'm sure there's probably some really valuable things in here. The contents include things like the power of complicated feelings, younger sisters and other variations, why sibling trauma is universal, and just talking about the group dynamics among sisters, the power of sister stories, success and insecurity when one sister outshines the other, and then it ends with sistering, a lifelong tie. And so it really goes through all the different dynamics of, you know, that growing up with a sister, I have not, you know, read the whole book, so I don't know if it goes through. What could be sort of interesting to me is if it went through some of the relationships between sisters that are not your typical, like, biological sisters. I feel like that's kind of something really fascinating to explore, and I was trying to find more fiction and nonfiction about that, but I wasn't able to really come up with too much in time for this, so...
We are out of time, Kelly.
Oh, darn. So,
but we will have a link later this afternoon up on our website to all the books that we talked about this morning at capeandislands.org. Jill Erickson, reference librarian at Falmouth Public Library, and Kelly Porter, librarian at the Woods Hole Library. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.